All right. So how do you feel about this whole impression management thing? Do you feel a little sleazy? Why? Are people just supposed to know how wonderful you are? I can make it worse. Are people supposed to spend their time carefully checking you out and evaluating you so that they can properly understand how hard you work and how successful you are? And for whom have you done that lately? I'm not picking on you. I'm picking on the idea.
I mean, I think there's really no... I mean, you bring up a good point. There's no way of others knowing how good or bad of a teacher you are unless someone observes or you advertise that. So I think you just expect things to kind of transfer word of mouth or that people trust that you do a good job. But clearly, like, what happens in the classroom stays in the classroom.
Except the really juicy shit. Then that's what gets spread around as if it were common.
So it's an aspect of teaching not having...
Most people haven't. When I do that in a workshop, I did a workshop a couple of years ago where the ticket to admission was you had to have a college level teaching award. That's who I have in a room. And I started running through these things and people were like, never thought about that. These are great teachers. These are tremendous teachers. But even the best teachers haven't thought about everything. I go to more workshops than I give. And at least a couple times a year, it's like, oh, how could I not thought of that? Or I've always done a really shitty version of that. Okay, so, but why? Why do you feel sleazy?
I don't know. I just feel like you shouldn't have to advertise yourself.
Okay. So down there on the wall, we have everybody's most recent publication. Okay? We've had 7 college level teaching awards in the last 4 or 5 years. Where are they? In everybody's room. Okay? There's one of my things downstairs because they ended up sending 2 of them, and I don't need one. I only need one. And they grabbed it and they stuck it down there. Okay? They're not going to do it for you. I was out at Doan the other day. I'm at Doan a lot because I have 2 kids who go there. And I was hanging out in the psych department, and they have like one of the award-winning departments on campus at a teaching school. None of them are up in public. What is up in public? MyProfessorSucks.com, which they finally changed the name of. It's now called Rate Your Professor. But it was originally copyrighted as MyProfessorSucks.com. You think I'm kidding? Go look it up.
No.
Yeah, it's a cool website. Yeah.
So how do you advertise your... I mean, obviously teaching awards are for a select... 1 or 2 people.
Right.
In the department. So, I mean, how do you advertise your teaching if you don't win an award?
Okay. That's one really great question. I'm going to change the question a little bit. To whom do you advertise? Okay. When I got here 31 years ago, we had 2 badass teachers. Dan Bernstein and Ross Thompson. And they got all the really good awards. And they were known as good teachers. One as a large classroom teacher. The other as a small classroom teacher. I was in each of their offices at least once a week telling them what I was working on, what I was going to try as a teacher, what I was going to use to assess it, what worked, and even what didn't. I created a total impression. And it was right. I'm not talking about lying, cheating, and stealing. Okay? I'm talking about selling really good used cars. But I made sure that they knew that I was constantly trying to get better at teaching. And everything that went right. Because at the end of the year, when people get together and say, "How's the rookie doing?" Everybody's going to look at them to see how my teaching's going. And everybody's going to look at John Flowers and Dan Ledger, how my research is going. So I probably spent a solid 2 hours a week. An hour with these two guys, and an hour with these two guys. And Theo Sondrager. You remember Theo? Theo Sondrager, who was the person who had taught the Methodist course forever before I got it. I made sure that she knew everything that I was trying to do in that class, because that was her course. It wasn't quite that I had to ask permission, but it was okay if I did. When I changed to this, and we did this, and I did this in this order, and I don't really like doing it this way, Theo. She was like, "Well, everyone has to find their own way." But that's, it's the who to as much as the how to. Because if you're talking to people that want to have the conversation takes care of itself. It's a lot easier to sell somebody who's looking for a used Chevy to sell them that used Chevy. Does that make sense? Yes.
And another way I was kind of thinking of it is not feeling sleazy at all. Because I would imagine that kind of the impressions are just a guide for motivating yourself. You know, like if you have some target person that, you know, you're trying to keep in mind of why, I mean, you want to impress to some degree, you're going to deliver, you know, you have a more thought out plan than just doing this to teach the material, but you're doing it to affect people.
You're inviting scrutiny. And everybody's better behaved when mom's watching. Right? I mean, that's one of the great ones where, you know, Jonah will ask me, "Okay, so I don't know what to do, because we're going into, he's meeting with his first client today. And he's scared shitless. It's fine. It's good for him. He's scared once in a while." He says, "I don't know what to do." And I says, "Just pretend Grandma and Jesus are watching." Okay. He knows what that means. And one of the things that that will do is that sometimes you want to do something that you know these people may look askance at. Okay. One of the interesting things was that Dan Bernstein was all about retesting systems. Test, retest. Ross hated him. Now, part of this is because one of them liked essay tests in classes of 15 and 20. The other one was teaching intro to sometimes 300 at a time. It's easy to not like retesting systems 300 at a time. Okay, I was never able to completely tease out of him whether it was a pedagogical decision or just he had found where he is finally a little too lazy. Because we're all too lazy. We all run into it. So eventually you run into it. And so I knew that I was going to have to make two people happy, neither of which, who don't agree, barely agree with each other on most aspects of teaching. These are two of the most teaching awarded people on the campus who cannot have a discussion about teaching without one of them stomping out of the room. Well, there's a stage set for you. Okay, so if they're going to think well of me, I got to work at it. I got to find those things that they agree with and defend those things that they don't. Make sense? One of the best tools for impression management is the midterm eval. Because the midterm eval, think of it as a discussion. So how are we doing so far? Okay? We can do more on this if you want, but basically, when somebody likes something or doesn't like something and expresses on a midterm eval, there's three basic answers. "Ooh, you're right, let's try it that way." "Ooh, you're right, this isn't working, but I have something else I want to try instead." Or, "Buck up, this is going just the way I want it to. We're going to continue to do this." And teaching stats, you're going to run into a ton of that. Decisions that, for example, you've already brought up a couple of, you know, how much by hand stuff do they have to do? Somebody else said, how much math do they have to know? Their answer to both of that is none, ever. Don't even come near me with the idea. You're going to have to sell that. I don't know if you're ever going to get people to embrace doing hand calculations or learning matrix algebra or that stuff. Okay? But if you take a minute and defend it, here's why we're doing this stuff that you don't see any value for. Does that make sense? So, for example, we don't do stuff by hand in the graduate course because I have absolutely no evidence that it will help anything. Okay, you're not going to have to do that. So that reason for making you do it is gone. And I know the people that did a lot of research, and I did a bunch of research, that shows that doing things by hand can teach you things about statistics, but it's slow, poorly probabilistic, and everyone hates it. Let's find something else. But in the 350 course, they have to do one of each. They got to do a univariate, you know, means and standard deviations and shit like that. They got to do a correlation, a chi-square, between groups and within groups, and ANOVA. And I said, you have to do this for three reasons. One, for some of you, this will be the epiphany. While you're crunching through that, you're going to see something that I did not communicate to you the other ways that we've talked about this. And I want that. I want you to get it. Second of all, you may be, will end up somewhere where you're going to have to do this and it's going to matter. And I said, and third of all, I need to know that you can follow a set of instructions. Because you're going to have to teach yourself stuff in the future. And I need to know that you can sit down with the easiest possible situation, which is the handout that I made, that how to calculate things, is one for one tied to the assignment. This step one is that step one. This step nine is that step nine. It's all sequenced. If you can't follow this and do it right, we need to know now so we can remediate and fix it. And you're like, shit, he's got reasons. That's one of my favorite teaching evals, is people say, God, he's got a reason for everything. Yeah. Cal says it's not a good reason. I'll revert to it on occasion if I have to. But the other thing is that system is set up as one big green thing. I mean, they get on. Do I have it open? I don't have it running because the server's down. But they get on, they get a data set, they get a story, and then they go through, and just like the green things, they can check each answer. And their score is the number that they get right the first time. So they go all the, and if they can't get something, they can ask for help. And it shows them the answer and shows them some other stuff. And then their score is the number they get right the first time. And if they like their score, they're done. And if they don't, they click on a button and they get another set of data and they're off. So guess what happens? Average performance, well, it's bimodal. One is like 98, the other is 12. Some people just don't. Well, it's only worth 5% of my grade. I'll just take the 5% hit and not have to deal with it. That usually presages other things that they're going to take the hit on. And so is this making sense? You are constantly going to be selling, I think. The best teachers are constantly selling. They're selling the choices they make. They're selling the work they do. They're selling the success they have. Yeah.
So from the assignment that you had us do, right, we have to think of all the stakeholders and what's important to them. And then ultimately we decide what's important to us.
Yes.
So what about when those things are in conflict with each other?
You change them.
So let me...
Grant me the strength to change what I can. What is it? The strength to... No, the courage to change what I can. What is that quote? And now people who are listening to the audio tape are repeating it. God, Cal, think of it. What's the quote? God, grant me the what is it? The wisdom. Okay, good. God bless the net. What do you got?
The things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know
the... That's right. Once I read
the grand me. Yeah, the courage to
change the things I can, and wine to accept the things I can. I like the ones that too. The courage to change the things I can.
Serenity.
And the but there's something about is it serenity? Is this,
yeah, it's serenity.
Yeah, no, the serenity is like the right version. But basically, my third one is the arrogance to ignore the difference, the courage to change the things I can, the wisdom to know the things I can't change, and the arrogance to ignore the difference. Sometimes what is tradition or what is common is crap. Sometimes, you know, people did not want me teaching factorials and multiple regression and path analysis in the 350 course. What course? That's not an introductory course. Why do you teach those things? So what I did was I got all of the 300 and 400 level textbooks being used in our department and those courses that our kids tend to take as 300 and 400 level courses outside of the department. I got all of those textbooks and I did a table and showed that every one of those textbooks has in it factorials, multiple regression, and path analysis, and I added one which was meta-analysis. Why are we going to teach those things in the only methods and stats course they get before they take the 400 level courses? Because where else are they going to get it? Make sense? I mean, when I showed that to the curriculum committee when we were renaming the course, they were like, well, why would you want to do this? Wait, you're why I want to do this. In the book that you use, there are 15 path models. Would you like them to know what that is before they walk in the door? Well, you put it that way. Okay, and try and find me a 400-level book that doesn't talk about interactions. And the first person to complain about this was one of our social psychologists. That's where interactions in psychology comes from. Make sense? So, yeah, sometimes you gotta have the courage to ignore the difference and change shit. In general, especially after you got a couple of years in, they're going to be looking to you to change things and make it better. I mean, the first year in, you might want to play along. I wasn't smart enough to do that, but you probably would want to. But you are, I think, constantly going to be selling at those three levels. And really, do you work harder when you convince something has value? So will your kids.